Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you, homeschool father of five. We've raised our kids out here in Eastern Plains of Colorado for 9 to 28 years. Bill Jack in studio with me right now as we chronicle the decline of Western civilization. Just finished the book, Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West. And Bill, as I have studied history and I have thrown myself into the study of Western civilization from the period of the Roman Empire up to the present day, the rise and fall, it seems to me that we are living in the Roman Empire under the persecuting forces of Nero in roughly 67 AD, or maybe Domitian or Vespasian or some of these other guys.
I'd say we're definitely at the dawn of the Nazi era.
You believe so?
I am convinced.
Erwin Lutzer speaks in that tone as well.
Yes, he does. In his book, I read his book. What was the name of his book? I can't think of it right now. But it was really impactful, and I found it to be convicting and in the terms of this is where we are as a nation. This is where I find myself, and it's sad to me.
It's possible some churches and some Christians may exempt themselves from persecution, but it seems that the pressures are intensifying everywhere. The U.S. Health and Human Services Department has announced it's going to add homosexuality and transgender discrimination to Title IX prohibitions when it comes to access to medical services. This means that the department is going to, quote-unquote, act on reports of discrimination. The director of the Office of Civil Rights, which apparently is directly under the HHS department, this guy referred to the recent Bostock decision, commenting that the OCR will follow Supreme Court precedent and federal law and ensure that the law's protections extend to those individuals who are discriminated against based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And what this means, what does this mean? What this means is that Christian doctors will be required to perform sex change surgeries, whether or not it's against their conscience to do so. And that's where we are right now. Let me address this question. Should a Christian doctor perform a sex change surgery? You know, is that a sin, malum in se, to perform a sex change surgery?
This is so familiar to me, this argument that you're proposing, that because I heard it when the Jack Phillips controversy was going on, the baker here in Colorado who refused to participate in an event that was a violation of his conscience.
Homosexual wedding.
He refused to bake a wedding cake for a same-sex couple. And I've had friends of mine say, well, wouldn't Jesus bake the cake just to show that he loved the same-sex couple? And my response was, Jesus wasn't a baker, but he was a carpenter. Would he build a wedding bed for the same-sex couple just to show that he loved them? Jesus wasn't a baker, but he was a rabbi. Would he perform the marriage ceremony for the same-sex couple just to show that he loved them? You see, my point is that it's very clear that people would say no about the wedding bed, and people would say no about performing the ceremony, but it's the slippery slope once you say, well, wouldn't Jesus just compromise a little bit on this? Well, and in Hitler's Cross, which is Lutzer's book, he points out how the church began this slippery slope of compromise and compromise and compromise. And in fact, Martin Niemöller was a German World War I submarine captain, and after the war he became a pastor. He was a pastor in the Confessing Church in Germany. Now in Germany there was the German Christian branch of the church. And I thought, oh, German Christian, that's like American Christian. No.
They actually call themselves the Evangelicals.
Yes. They supported Hitler.
They sure did.
They replaced the cross in the front of churches with the swastika flag. They replaced the Bible on the altar with Mein Kampf, Hitler's book. They would baptize babies by wrapping them in the swastika. And in opposition was the Confessing Church. They opposed the German Christian Church. The Confessing Church opposed Hitler. Martin Niemöller was a pastor in the Confessing Church, and he was in prison for being outspoken in his criticism of Hitler. After the war, he was released. He toured the United States, and he was often asked, you know, why? How? How did this happen? Why did Christians allow Hitler to rise to power? And his answer has been, you know, given in a couple of different ways. And here was his answer. It's classic. He said, first, they came for the florists in New Mexico, and I did not speak out because I was not a florist.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They came for the bakers in Oregon, and I was not a baker, so I did not speak out. And then they came for the photographer in Kentucky, and I did not speak out because I was not a photographer.
Yeah.
And then they came for the communists, and I did not speak up because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for Jack Phillips, and my name was not Jack Phillips, so I did not speak up. And then they came for you see where we're going.
They came for the medical doctors next.
Yes.
And I was not a medical doctor.
And they came for the hoteliers, and I was not someone who worked in hotels, so I did not speak up. And then they came for me.
But thankfully, the churches have been exempted.
Yes. Thankfully, thankfully that we don't have to, as a church, submit to the same laws that we're imposing upon the Christian bakers and florists and candlestick makers.
Yeah.
But that makes us nothing more than a special interest group, doesn't it, if we're the church crying out, please give us an exemption.
That's for sure. Well, friends, I think we need to stand up, and I think we need to stand up on the basis of God's Word and the principles of God's Word. And certainly, we cannot live by lies. We cannot give any credence to that which is sinful. Medical doctors, they can't perform sex change surgeries. That would be to give way to the radical autonomy of the day, and God's law specifically says that a woman should not put on a man's garment, and a man should not put on a woman's garment. That is an abomination to God. And you say, well, is that the law of God that speaks directly to this issue? It is. It actually is.
Yes.
Speaking from the lesser to the more significant or the greater problem, if one cannot, who is a male, put on a female garment, he certainly cannot put on a female's anatomy. And that would be an abomination, and the doctor has no position whatsoever. No Christian doctor should ever be in the position where he would give credence to these abominations. He cannot provide food offered to idols, or he cannot participate in the food that is offered to idols.
He's mutilating God's creation.
Yeah.
And that's wrong. To perform such sex changes as is common here in Colorado in the city of Trinidad, which pioneered, if I'm understanding, the first sex change operations, that is mutilating God's creation.
Yeah.
It is defaming, it is destroying, it's defiling God's creation.
It's violating God's law at the most significant, abominable levels.
But it all begins,
Christians are not to do that.
All begins in little steps, mm-hmm. just little compromises, and it depends upon who's in control, doesn't it?
You know, it's also interesting. I want to add this before we take the break, Bill. There is a two-step process involved here. The problem is that government is grabbing control of the schools. Government is grabbing control of the medical industries.
And thereby perverting
it.
Yeah, they're grabbing control of people's minds.
Well, they're doing that first. But they're also taking control of education. It's at the point that they take control of education by the funding of it. It's at the point that they take control of the medical world by funding it that we have surrendered the freedom, the liberty to make decisions for ourselves in these spheres. In other words, the problem is a two-step process, and I want people to understand how this happened. How did all of this come about? It's a two-step process. First, government gains control of it by funding, and then they corrupt it. So step one is to gain control of it. Step two is to corrupt it. First, gain control of medicine by funding, and then mandate sex change surgeries. First, gain control of education by funding, and then mandate homosexual indoctrination and thus corrupt all of it. First, gain control of the elderly by funding, then euthanize as many as possible, and that's to come within the next 10 years. First, gain control of medical insurance by funding, then mandate birth control and abortifacient funding without the copay. Gain control and then corrupt it. That's the process, and that's how you destroy a civilization. You can read more in my book, Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West. Now available, by the way, copies of this in the mail. We'll be mailing them out within about 5 or 6 days from now. So Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West. Get a copy now at generations.org. Be back with more in just a moment on the Generations broadcast.
Attention, homeschool parents. Here at Generations, we know that finding literature curriculum that engages your children's minds and helps them develop a strong Christian worldview can be an overwhelming task. That's why we've developed a Christian discipleship-focused literature curriculum that's centered around the most important work of literature ever written, the Word of God. Not only do our Bible-centric courses seek to place Christ at the head of literature studies, but they will also teach your children how to analyze all literature from a Christian perspective, enabling them to be more than conquerors in today's battle of worldviews. By introducing them to the essential stories of the faith, along with the written works of history's best Christian authors, our literature curriculum provides the bedrock for a firm foundation of faith in the hearts of your children. So, get started today with Generations Christian Discipleship Curriculum and watch your children embark on an incredible journey towards strengthening their faith and discovering the greatest Christian stories ever told. You can learn more and browse our selection of carefully curated works at generations.org/curriculum. That's generations.org/curriculum.
And we are back on the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you, Bill Jack from Worldview Academy with me. And Bill, we talked about government control and perversion or corruption of medical work. But what about education? Education to me, as you said, I think is more fundamental than anything else they're doing. They're doing their best to gain control of it.
Yeah.
And then they will pervert it. They've already done that, but now they want control over the other 15 to 16% of education. And let me give you stats real quick on where education is in America today. I'm not sure people are aware of this, but private education has fallen off significantly in just the last couple of years, believe it or not. Nationwide, Catholic school enrollment fell 6.4% at the start of this school year, believe it or not. Actually, in 2000, Catholic schools, 2.7 million kids, dropped off to 2.1 million kids by 2017. Now it's down to the 1.6s and 7s. So you're looking at a massive decline.
And now the educrats want to control that 10%. That is now homeschooling.
We've compensated somewhat for the decline of private education, right? I mean, private schools.
Right.
Private schools dropped off from 15% down to 5%, while homeschooling improved from 0 to 10. 10 plus 5 equals 15, and we're pretty much where we were in 1958. Well, they went after private school in the sense that I think private schools was excessively expensive. You've got massive taxation since 1958. Think about how much governments have increased taxation on the average family
and the,
by orders of magnitude.
Yeah, largest portion of any state budget goes to education.
You got it.
And so, it can't be changed. Mm-hmm. It's mandated.
And about the only option families have to save themselves some money. And, you know, I'm going to cost, I'd say, the average family of five kids $30,000 to $40,000 a year to educate their kids in a local private school. So homeschooling is their only option.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful option. It's not the only option. It is a beautiful option mm-hmm. that they have. It's family friendly, if you wish.
You're preaching to the choir, my friend.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
But
so
now,
that's on the radar now.
Here's this article from FEE.com, the Foundation for Economic Education or something of that sort.
And for economic, yeah.
Education. This is Carrie McDonald. And she evidently had an interview or a debate with the Harvard professors proposing a presumptive ban on home education.
Yeah, this was last year.
Yeah.
And it's fairly well known, but she comes away with five things that she learned debating the Harvard prof who called for a presumptive ban on homeschooling. Now, what's interesting is Carrie McDonald, she has some bona fides too. I mean, this is not just some homeschool mom who is passionate about her children debating a Harvard prof. She, Carrie McDonald, is an adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute, Forbes contributor. She has her BA in economics from Bowdoin and a master's of education in education policy from, let's see, Harvard University.
No, so she's a Harvardite as well.
Yes.
So she's up against this Harvard professor, Elizabeth Bartlett, who is well known for her opposition to homeschooling or freedom for parents to make these decisions for their kids.
Oh, in fact, here's what Bartlett explained. Quote, some parents can't be trusted to not abuse and neglect their children, end quote. And that is why, quote, kids are going to be way better off if both parent and state are involved,
you know,
end quote.
I like to use the example from time to time. People say, yeah, I know a homeschool family in which, so you've got these instances in which, you know, isolated instances in which somebody knows a family where they do it wrong or they abuse their kids or what have you. I remember the story of a public school family who would keep their kids in these cages, these dog cages. They'd come home from school and they'd sleep in these dog cages at night. And, you know, people would say, yeah, but, you know, homeschooling is the problem. Well, I don't think so. Any parent can abuse a child, not just a homeschool parent, but a private school parent or a public school parent for that matter. And it's not
teachers,
the method of education that determines whether or not a child will be abused.
Teachers can abuse children, too.
In fact, a number of surveys, including our generation survey that was done about 4 to 5 years ago, we simply asked the question, have you been sexually abused of those kids who had attended private school, public school, homeschool? And it turns out that if you had been public schooled, you were three times more likely to be sexually abused than the homeschool kids in our survey of some 10,000 homeschool graduates and public and private school graduates. So it was interesting that students who had been private schooled or public schooled were much, much more likely to be sexually abused than kids who had grown up in the homeschools.
Yeah. You know, I've heard the recent shutdown of the schools because of this so-called pandemic has resulted in a drop in reporting of child abuse and child neglect. And one of the arguments is we need to open the schools back up because that way we can report on child abuse and child neglect, as if that does not occur during the summer months.
Mm-hmm.
And is that the role of government? Is that the jurisdiction of government?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's the jurisdiction of family and church, and then the civil magistrate, if there is neglect or abuse, that needs to be prosecuted. But that's not the purpose of education. That's not the purpose of the public schools.
And it's not the purpose of the civil magistrate to have cameras in every home and every bedroom, constantly trying to eliminate any possibility of anything bad ever happening to anybody.
Exactly.
You see, the police state is ultimately, I think, resting upon the nanny state. Do you follow me? And the nanny state is always wanting to prevent any kind of potential abuse or potential harm from happening to any person. And the way they think they can do it is by incorporating the police state, in which cameras are in every single bedroom, every single home, and we are under constant surveillance of Big Brother, whom we know will never abuse his powers.
Yeah, that's where, coming back to Carrie McDonald's five things she learned, I take exception with the first point. Her first point is, there are people who believe the state should be your co-parent. I'm going to say she's wrong on that. It's not that there are people who believe the state should be your co-parent. It's that the state should be your daddy, your parent.
Right, the parent of the parents.
Yes.
Yeah, you're like the nanny state.
Yeah, in parenti locus is a common thing, and it means that in place of the parents, when a student walks onto the campus, the parent no longer has authority or jurisdiction. The state assumes jurisdiction.
I'll never forget the moment in which myself and several other representatives from the homeschool population were sitting there in a House Education Committee meeting in which they were debating whether or not to make the compulsory attendance law in Colorado even more restrictive for parents. And we argued against it. We didn't want more restrictions upon parents. We wanted to make decisions as to what our children should and should not be doing. And so the homeschool population was there. And I do remember a judge from Pueblo, he turned around as he was testifying in favor of even more control over the school-age population and expanding the purview of the compulsory attendance law in the state of Colorado. He turned to us homeschoolers and he said this, "All of Colorado's children belong to us." Now, that's the socialist mentality, isn't it? That is the ultimate humanist, platonic, Rousseauian view of children. They belong to the state.
Yeah.
Now, what do Christians say? Christians say they belong to Jesus. Our kids belong to Jesus, but they're on loan to us as parents. Parents are the ones who are responsible to God for the raising of these children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, and we are not responsible to the state for this. Are you with me?
Yeah. And you said that there will be surveillance in every home, and some of our listeners are going, nah, he's just overstating the fact. That brings us to point number two in McDonald's five things she learned. Random home visits will be a weapon of the state. And she quotes Professor Bartlett's recommendation. Quote, here's what Bartlett said. To state that they want to have surveillance into our homes by having government officials visit and having parents show proof of their qualified experience to be a parent to their own child is yet another way for local and federal government to do what they have done to Native Americans, blacks, the Japanese, Hispanics, etc. in the past. Her proposal would once again interfere and hinder a certain population from progressing forward. That's what somebody wrote about Professor Bartlett's recommendation that the state have random home visits.
And you know what? That has been attempted.
Yes,
it
has.
In places across America. In other states in which homeschooling has been permitted by the civil magistrates, they have scheduled random home visits on the part of professionals. But that's scary. As I see it, that's really scary.
And therefore, as you pointed out, private education is in danger. That's our third point. Despite the landmark 1925 U.S. Supreme Court decision that ruled it unconstitutional to ban private schools, there is this hostility towards private education. You can see that in the charter school movement.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movement, an attempt for parents to be in charge of what the education is under the state system. And charter schools, it's hard to get one started. It's hard to maintain one. They have to meet higher standards than the public schools. And so government wants to control the minds of our children. And parents are not allowed to escape the system. And so homeschooling is going to come under the microscope.
And that's what she's coming to.
Yes.
She says that homeschooling is under the microscope. But by God's grace, it's still been an island of freedom for us. In fact, at the end of the whole article, she says homeschoolers are probably going to win.
Yeah. Despite this demand for state standardized testing.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, whose standards?
Yeah.
If it's the states, you fail. You automatically fail. You as a homeschooler or a private schooler, you failed the standard. Because the standard is no longer academic excellence and achievement. It is what is socially acceptable. Transgenderism, homosexuality,
mm-hmm.
all of that becomes part of the standard of achievement and education. And yet, she does say homeschoolers will win.
Yeah.
I hope she's correct. I just don't see the state giving up control. They're Pac-Man. They just keep gobbling up our liberties.
And the main way they've done it, you know, Bill, is by funding homeschools, not just in this state, but many other places. And why is it so dangerous for the state to fund the education of our children.
Because what they fund, they control.
That's exactly right. And that's the way in which they will regain control of home education in America. Somebody is going to show up at your door, say, we're from the government, we're here to help you, and we will give you a free computer, and we will give you free curriculum. It's all free. Just come under our rubric. And that, my friends, has co-opted a fair significant amount of the home education movement across America. And if that ever happens, friends, I would encourage you to seek freedom first. Because remember, if you don't have the freedom, then you're not going to be able to make the decisions relating to the proper Christian education of your children. The state is not going to allow for you to educate your children with a distinctively Christian education and a distinctively Christian curriculum. So let me just encourage you to check out our resources. Check out our what we call our biblical worldview-based curriculum on steroids. As secular education has become increasingly epistemologically self-conscious, that is, self-consistently humanistic, thoroughly transgendered, thoroughly homosexualized, thoroughly humanized, thoroughly anti-Christian, isn't it time that Christians, real Christians, would seek out a thoroughly Christian education with a thoroughly biblical worldview under each and every subject? That's what we're seeking to do as part of the Christian Discipleship Curriculum Program, which is now available first grade through 12th grade on our website. And by the way, the costs of this curriculum, it's just, I was just checking it out again today. It was anywhere between about $129 and $175 for a full curriculum. Now, you add your own math and grammar, but the rest of it is right there. That package is there for you at $129 to $175. And from time to time, we have sales as well. So if it's a little tight for you, or you're an international family, you have a hard time purchasing the curriculum and paying for the postage, just simply email me at host@generations.org and we'll find a way to get you our Christian discipleship curriculum for your children.
Do you get free Uber rides and free coronavirus shots with that?
No, we don't. In fact, we do not mandate vaccines for our curriculum and for our program. All right, well, that wraps up this edition of the Generations Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson and Bill Jack, and we invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.